With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Beaver Banter Podcast. I'm Nick Daschle, and I cover Oregon State football and basketball for the Oregonian and Oregon Live. And I do cover football and basketball because last night I was doing two basketball games, and I also did football stuff yesterday. So November is, I don't know if you want to call it hell month for me, just based on all the places I'm at during these 3 weeks of football and basketball together, but it's kind of fun, but it's hectic for sure. But we're here to talk football, and the Beavers are coming off a 24-21 loss at Washington, and this week they're going to be at home playing California Bears at 6 p.m. in Reser Stadium. Oregon State's 6-3. California is looking to get back on track. They've got a 5-game losing streak, but they're coming off a 41-35 loss to USC. So it's not a given Oregon State's going to win Saturday, but we'll talk about it. We'll mostly talk about the Washington game and what happened up there. Joining me on the podcast, as he does every week, is former Oregon State cornerback Kyle White. Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's start with this Washington game. Lots of anticipation going to this thing because there was a bye week, and so there was a lot of build up to this game. Both teams are 6-2. I walked down to the field, and it's not a hurricane, but it was darn close to something like that. I mean, we were watching guys warm up with punts. They tried to kick them to the middle of the field, and they ended up in the stands. The ball was blowing it so far offline. So it was a pretty impossible situation. The winds were swirling a lot during the game, so it was tough. It was tough for the offenses for sure to try to throw the ball. If you didn't put some zip on it, I mean, you saw a couple times where, you know, deep balls got thrown offline probably 5-10 yards. It wasn't a matter of just having to throw the ball. You had to kind of guide it to the guy, your receiver. So that doesn't make for good offense for sure. But anyway, we'd probably start with quarterback play because that seems to be prominent on everyone's mind. Chance Nolan hasn't played since October 1st. He's had the injury. And Ben Gulbertson, he's been the starter the last four games. He lost his first game Friday against the Huskies. He's 3-1 as a starter. I think people are wondering when Chance Nolan's going to come back. I'm here to tell you, I don't think it's anytime soon. I've seen Chance recently, and I know he's trying to get back into practice, but I mean, he just has some trouble with the neck, and it's tough for him to really get back into it. Plus he's just not cleared. So, for the time being, it's Ben Gulbranson. So anyway, let's start with a quarterback, and throwing in the wind. I don't know how much experience you've got playing in the wind and whatnot, but boy, that seemed to be an issue Friday night for Ben and you know, to some degree Michael Penix, but he seemed to have a better feel for it, although he did throw 52 times.
I mean, yeah, when I was watching the game, I mean, I've played in the wind a handful of times, more so in Canada than I did here. More in Oregon, you know, you just have to deal with a lot of the rain. But when I was in Canada, it was more of, you can't really throw deep in that high of wind. You know, I haven't dealt with that much wind experience in the ways that they had to this past week. But one, it didn't look fun. Two, it's pretty hard to have deep shots, in which that's what we're more known for, is our deep shots. I felt like their quarterback was, he figured out, and especially with the coaching as well, if you're going to pass, you got to have short-term pass, like short passes, 10 yards, 12 yards, 5 yards. And that's how you keep the ball rolling. But we're so used to, you know, our play action deep passes that when I watched us attempt one, you saw it go from the middle of the field to about, no, he tried to throw it to the right side of the field and it came back to more towards the middle. So it was like, yeah, like that's just not going to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seemed like a rough pass game kind of night. And yeah, like when you have those, it's hard to make a game not as much one-dimensional as you want it to be.
Yeah, I know Oregon State had a plan to throw. They had a plan to throw deep on Washington in that game, and Brian Lindgren left a lot of plays on his call sheet because of the win. But I just thought in that situation Friday, you pretty much shouldn't have been throwing deep at all, because it just, and I understand why they have to do that. I mean, as the game wore on, Washington was putting more guys up into the box. They were, you know, they were definitely overplaying the run, and you know, Oregon State needed to kind of shake them out of that by throwing the ball. But I mean, if all you're going to do is throw the ball deep down the field with almost no chance of completing it, well, I don't see the point of that. So I don't know what, I mean, you saw all that, but, and you explained it there with Washington. The other thing with Washington, I mean, let's be honest. Washington has one of the better receiving cores in the Pac-12. Oregon State just is not at Washington's level for receivers. So, you know, Michael Penix has just more, he had more to work with out there as well.
I think they do have good receivers, but I mean, when you watch that quarterback, he plays tremendous as a leader. Like, he does have all the, and when you listen to the commentators, yeah, like he is a heavy NFL prospect. I mean, he knows when to throw the ball away. He knows when to make the plays. He knows what kind of route concepts he wants and what looks best and what looks safe, especially in that kind of weather. And when you have that kind of quarterback, I think it's easier to make a good receivers look great. On top of, you do have a great leader in your backfield. And, you know, we have a freshman, a redshirt freshman. So, you know, we went off of our normal game plan when the game plan should have been able to be, should, it doesn't work in that kind of atmosphere or that kind of weather. It does make things hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing needs to be pointed out too is that Penix also had statistically had his worst game of the year. I mean, and it was a combination of Oregon State's defense and the wind, I'm sure. But I mean, he is definitely an NFL prospect, and I don't think at this point you could say, you know, Ben Gulbertson is an NFL type yet. I mean, I'm not saying he couldn't get there, but right now you can't say that. Oregon State's quarterback situation. Okay, so we've got three guys really in the mix. Ben, Chance Nolan, Tristan Jebbia. I know they would like to play. Chance Nolan is the guy they would like to play. He won the job out of camp. I mean, he's the guy that the coaches thought gave him the best chance to win. But he just simply can't play right now. So it's got to be Ben Gulbertson. And some of the fans are losing their minds about, well, why isn't it Tristan Jebbia? You know, why isn't he playing? And, you know, all they can do is remember what he did in 2020. And when he, in 2020, he was fine, but before that, that was also before he had that serious hamstring issue. He wasn't the most mobile guy to begin with. he's less mobile now than he was before. And now that he's had the hamstring issue, I'm just going, do you really think the coaches know less than you do? They see this guy play every day. See both of them play every day. Do you think if they thought Tristan Jebbia gave him a better chance to win, he wouldn't be out there behind center? I mean, Tristan he's the nicest guy. I mean, everybody likes him. He's one of the captains. But you know, at the end of the day, it's a cutthroat business. And I mean, the coaches are going to go with who they think is going to win the best chance to win the game. And at this point, it's Ben Gulbranson. I just laugh at all these emails I get from people about Tristan Jebby. Like I said, he's a good guy, and you know, I think he's capable, but I don't think at this point he's Ben Gulbranson.
No, I 100% agree. I think that, you know, when you look back at Gibby's history with Oregon State, it was awesome. I mean, you know, he wasn't the most mobile quarterback, but you know, he made good plays, and that injury, I still remember it. I mean, it's Civil War in Corvallis. You know, it really sucked to watch, and me as a athlete or former athlete, and I'm pretty sure any athlete in any sport can tell you, when you get hurt, they don't actually go away. And then when you get really hurt, they never will actually go away, like even if you heal them. So, you know, like with his injury, yeah, I bet if he knew he could get out there and he could make a better stand than Ben, I bet he would. And I bet that the coaches would 100% back him on that. But when you look at Ben, and he's mobile, he's young, he can sling the ball, and as time goes on, he's going to get better. So I think that fans need to just back it. And when Chance gets a chance to come back, I think he's, you know, he's going to work with what he's got, and he's going to do well. It's just, you know, when injuries happen in football or in sports, yeah, it puts a damper on your whole situation and any ideas that you have seeing for the season. But, you know, it's part of sports, and it's part of football especially, is you got to roll with the punches and figure out what you got to do from there. And I think that Gibby's injury is one that probably, you know, I think he's a great leader, and I think he's probably training Ben as much as he can and trying to help him as much as he can. But on the field, it's not something he can do to help us win. I think he's more of a leader standpoint.
I mean, Tristan Jebbia's case, the hamstring muscle tore away from the bone. I mean, that was a serious injury. I mean, you could heal that, but it's still going to have an impact, I think. And nobody's told me that, but I just, it's hard to believe that doesn't have something to do with his mobility. But again, if they had to play him, they would, and I think he'd be fine. I just think the coaches look at Ben and they go, he's got a better chance to win a football game for us than Tristan Jebbia. But how much do you think the lack, the passing game has really come into the forefront here, especially in these bigger games where they just don't seem to have much of a passing attack? How much do you think of that is on the receivers? What do you see from Oregon State's receivers? That do you think they're doing what they need to do to get this thing going, or are they not getting the separation, or is there just not enough talent, frankly, at the position to make this thing go?
In my mind, I do believe more so than not, it is on the receivers. It's not on the quarterback play. I mean, even when you watch the game, like, you have Harrison having some shots at catching like easier balls, and they're just drops. And so it's frustrating to see, one, you have a redshirt freshman quarterback out there trying to learn on the fly, which, you know, it's normal. You got to adapt and grow into the position at one point. But, you know, he's making good passes. He's getting what he can out of it. And then when your receivers are dropping balls, it's, you know, it makes things harder. Now, they come up with some great balls at times, but at the same time, like, I do believe we don't have the strength or the talent that we need yet at receiver. I think with Coach Smith and, you know, the way he recruits, it'll come in time. Give it a year, give it 2 years. But I think right now we're making do with what we have. And yes, we're starting to get the run game down. We have the freshman. That's great. And I think the receiving game is like the second area that we need to start focusing on more. They have potential. You know, that's just been the conversation all season long, is they have the potential to be good, but you're not seeing it fully unleashed throughout the whole receiving corps. You know, there's a lot of drop balls here and there, that things that should be easier first downs, or even getting closer to the sticks to make an easier first down. So yeah, it's made things rough. And I think, like, if I were to put like a percentage of it, I mean, I'm definitely saying like 70% of it, 68% is sort of on the receivers, just because, like, one, it's a freshman. Two, he's throwing decent balls. And, you know, I've seen more drops out of the receivers than, I mean, I see sort of mistakes on him. And I don't hold his standards crazy high because he is a freshman, but he's doing what he needs to help get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, the other issue is he doesn't have the offensive line is not giving him enough time to throw too. That, I mean, that's another issue, but and that's been a season long deal too. This offensive line is really good at run blocking, but they're still challenged to give their quarterback enough time, consistently give him enough time to get the passing game going. So, I mean, but I've been saying all along, when we get to the end of the season, when it comes to the transfer portal, getting a receiver has got to be job one. That's got to be the top priority, I think, to get a guy that, you know, I guess if I'm looking at the guy I would want is a 6'3". I would want a Isaiah Hodgins is what I would want. Somebody like that, they can count on third down, to go get me 9 yards on, you know, on third and eight and things like that. Those are things that they don't seem to have. I mean, they do convert third downs, but it's just inconsistent.
Yeah, and going away from even the third down, you just need to be able to get the ball thrown more and confidently being able to throw the ball so that you can be able to spread the field out more.
Yeah.
Like, let's say if you just have somebody to throw to, first, second down, you now spread the field down, whether you have a first down or not, and then you're able to run the ball more than you want to, or even as much as you normally want to, so that everything is open on the field. Whereas we are one dimensional. We were one dimensional, and it looks good for the first half until, you know, you go into a locker room and you make your adjustments. And Washington was like, look, like they're just going to run it. Let's just stop that. And, you know, we give ourselves an opportunity to win, in which they did.
Right. And just to, not to beat this thing too awful much, but if Luke Musgrave was out there, we might not even be talking about this. I mean, if they just had that one guy that was 6'6" and they could throw to in the middle of the field and he could just, you know, go out and get a ball from most guys, maybe this isn't an issue. But he's not out there and he's probably not coming back. So we got to make do with what they got. Oregon State's defense, we got to hold them to a high standard, I think. I mean, they've played well. We know what they are. They're one of the best defenses in the conference. What happened Friday night was, I'm not going to say it was unacceptable, but boy, that's a letdown on those third downs. The number of third downs that Washington converted, especially the longer ones. They were 11. Washington was 11 out of 18 on third down, and quite a few of them were of the third and 10 and 11 and the fourth and 10, the third and 24 for a touchdown. Just, they had, you know, 5, 6, 7 of those that just, they led to touchdowns, and that was, you know, kind of the difference. What did you see on those third downs that cost Oregon State?
Yeah, to me, it was just, you know, first down, second down looks great, and all of a sudden, it just seems like they got lackadaisical out there. It was just like defensive breakdowns, wide open middle of the field, penalties, but like it was just everything turned to be open instead of this is the play to stop everything. And it was frustrating to watch. See your defense. It's not even like they broke down. It's more like they just got lazy, or somehow there'd just be a lot of open area, and which was able for Washington to just make a play, get back on first down and start back all over. And so you're not giving yourself enough opportunity to get off the field when basically you're making it hard for yourself at getting all the way to third down just for them to convert all over again. And so, and especially on the longer, like you were saying, first and 10 and deeper, and it's just like, or third and 10 and deeper. So, I mean, I don't know. It was definitely hurtful to see. It was rough for Oregon State and any Oregon State fans. It's like, you see our defense is doing great things and all of a sudden just dropping it all one third down after another. And so, I don't know. I think that's one thing Coach Smith will work on. But,
well, I mean, what causes that though? Because I mean, the easy answer is, well, the secondary wasn't communicating well or something. But I don't honestly believe that was the whole issue. I think more of the issue was probably Penix had far too much time to throw, and he was able to go to his second and third reads pretty easily. One of those guys got open. So I'm thinking it was probably as much the pass rush as it was, you know, guys covering, because I mean, as a guy in the secondary, you're really only as good as your pass rush. You can't expect to cover a guy forever.
No, 100%. I think that, you know, as our pass rush grows, it'll get better, but we've seen it week in and week out. You know, we're not a team that makes multiple sacks. You know, we have to bring multiple blitzes. Our top sack person is, I think, a nickel, which is our also coverage guys. So, you know, I think with them not being able to get to the quarterback, it's almost not even a lackadaisical. It's just a tired thing where you can't really guard somebody who has the whole 55 width of the field plus however long the distance to the end zone to guard for 10 seconds or 7-8 seconds. You know, you want the ball out in at least like 4 or 5 seconds. And then if it's not, now you're into scramble mode and you don't know where they're actually going to go at that point. Like, you can get a read off of a formation, off of down distance, off the personnel. And so you get an idea of what's going to happen or how the play is going to develop so that you're able to save energy, watch the receiver, mirror the receivers. And then once the play breaks down, now you're just following or accidentally holding, and then flags come out. And so, you know, with the defensive line not being able to get to the quarterback as much, it strains the back end of the secondary.
Yeah. Got a couple of random topics here I was going to throw out. Just a couple of peeves that I've kind of gotten over last, you know, that just come up. I get a game like this. I get dozens of emails after games like Washington, and I get a lot of Twitter feedback and things like that. And one of the things that came out of this game was, well, Oregon State got out coached. And I just always have thought that's such a lazy way of putting blame on something, that somebody got out coached. I mean, I always think in most cases, Washington's had more talent. They talent makes you look like a good coach. And, you know, maybe Oregon State could have done a few things differently. But I don't know. They got out coached. I mean, the scheme they came to the game with, maybe it wasn't what it didn't, you know, it didn't work in the win. But I don't know that Oregon State lost because Washington, you know, coaches were better than Oregon State's. I think Michael Penix makes you look pretty darn good. I think you put Michael Penix on Oregon State's side, and I'm pretty sure that they would have won the game. I mean, he was the best player on the field.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would be. Yeah. Yeah, we'd be 8-0 if we had him.
Right. I mean, the thing with that game is, I mean, as bad as it felt, I mean, Washington didn't have the lead until the second to last play of the game. They never led in the game. They were always playing from behind. Oregon State could have been up big early in the game. I mean, the running game was doing pretty darn well. I think Oregon State's approach was pretty solid. I just think the win, you know, kind of took away some of their plan and whatnot. But boy, this out coach thing just drives me crazy, because it's just come up with something better than that when you're trying to pin blame on the reason somebody lost a game. It happens. I get it that sometimes coaches, one side just has a better game plan, but generally speaking, in a 24-21 game, I don't think Oregon State got out-coached here.
Oh, yeah. No, I think as like a coach, you're going to say it was on you, but I think Coach Smith played a great game. You know, I truly think that game came down to talent, and it was one guy versus one guy. It was Ben versus their quarterback. You know, it's just who could throw the ball and be able to open up the defense a little bit more. But, you know, you can't say it was bad coaching play, because – we're up 7-0. We gave ourselves an opportunity to score again. We didn't convert. We put them right back on our back. We came all right, drove back down the field again, put them right on our back, and couldn't come up with points again. So we gave ourselves three opportunities, converted on one, missed two. And then at the halftime, it's what, 14-7?
Yeah, it was 14-7.
And then after, yeah, and then, I mean, they literally did not, were not ever above us up until the last, what, like minute or so of the, like the last 30 seconds, 20 seconds of the game.
Yeah, it was the second to last play of the game. The Washington took their one and only lead of the game. So, I mean,
it's not coaching. It
wasn't a terrible, I mean, for as terrible as, you know, we all wanted to make that game, it was really close. So anyway, the other one that started to drive me crazy here lately is this narrative that Jonathan is just too reckless. We've got a lot of old fans in this fan base. I feel like that just can't come to grips with the fact that you don't always have to punt when you're at the 40-yard line or the 50-yard line, and you don't always have to kick a field goal on fourth and, you know, you don't, I mean, the modern game is more of an offensive game. You got to be thinking offense, and Jonathan has just decided that's going to be their brand. They're not going to kick field goals all the time, and they're not going to punt on fourth and five from the opponent's 45-yard line. They're going to go for it. And I know the analytics, people have a trouble with analytics. I know they're out there. You can look them up online to see what the percentages are. I think the analytics generally favor what Jonathan's doing over the long haul. I just think that's what he is. That's what he's going to be, and complaining about it just doesn't make any sense, because it's just not what Jonathan is. That's his brand, and that's what he wants to do. I didn't agree with him going for it on fourth and three from the 15, unless he had a really good play in mind, which I didn't feel like the play they ran was it. But the fourth and one, the fourth and two, on the other side where they tried to run Coletto, I do that every time. I do that every day of the week as well. I wouldn't always kick field. I just think getting in this mindset of always kicking field goals in these predictable situations, it just leads to losing. It's an old NFL mindset. I don't think it works in college as much, because it's more of an offensive game in college.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I was going to say, like, you can look at the statistics, like him going for it on fourth and short, and he's going to get it more times than actually not. So, like, for anybody that actually wants to look into that, you can definitely do so. There's actually a high school coach that did it, and he had never kicked, punted, or he had never like kicked a field goal on any fourth down. And like statistically, he was in the positive at the end of all of it. And he actually got like a D2 coaching job. So it works. And I actually like how aggressive Coach Smith is. I think that it's going to work, and it's going to go to his favor. Once people, kids, recruits start seeing how aggressive he is offensively and defensively, it's going to be a great tool to use and be like, look, we want to win. We want to score points. You know, we don't want to settle for field goals. We want to really win and make a big stand. And I think that the way he coaches works, and I agree with it. And I was hyped behind actually both of them. Like, I actually would have probably done the same thing. I was excited, and I was thinking he was going to go for it. When I saw it, I was really excited. Yeah, it didn't work in our favor, but you know, you win some, you lose some, and you learn from it. But when the only thing I would say from the whole thing, and I think I'm a little bit different standpoint from you and some others, is in ways you don't want Jack Coletto to just be there and you know he's getting the ball. I think that they need to figure out how to change it up, but still use him in the same way. So it's either off of, you know, him the jet sweep, or him at the running back, or even staying fullback, giving it fullback, or him just blocking. And I think he did amazing blocking. So, you know, I think that they have to figure out how to change the look so that not every defense immediately knows we know who's getting.
Well, they did do that on Friday. At one point, they ran the play where Coletto lined up at Wildcat, and then he shifted to the right, and Fenwick took it and took the spot and took the snap, and then they ran that play for a touchdown. I don't remember that in the third quarter. I think it was the third quarter where and then Jack went out and threw a block and got Fenwick loose. I mean, that play was wide open because Washington was looking for Coletto all the way on that one. And I can definitely see, I know they're thinking of other things they can do off of that as well. So, but anyway, that's the Smith mindset. And it drives me crazy to keep hearing people gripe about Jonathan going for it all the time. That's what he is. That's the coach he signed up for. I don't know. Anyway, one other side topic I was going to ask you about. I talk to players all the time about, what do you plan on, when they get later in their career, what do you plan on doing? And almost all of them, I'm going to the NFL. And I admire that, guys got a goal and whatnot. You should try to reach your goals, but man, the NFL's tough. You tried it. I mean, do you ever want, now that you look back, do you wonder how delusional sometimes players are about how they can go from, college to the NFL? I mean, you saw what it was like in a camp. What is it like, if you're not great in college, how the heck can you make it on an NFL roster? I mean, I think the odds are so long.
It baffles me, it makes me laugh. And I do respect the dream. I had the dream just as much as any kid. Really, for me, I actually didn't care to go to the NFL or have a shot at playing pro. I actually wanted to go back to school, get my master's, become a coach, just like Coach Smith. So I always have those conversations. I always had those conversations with Coach Smith when he came in. But when you get a shot at playing pro, you take it. And, when you get there, it's a totally different game. Like everything you learn from school, any play call, the way that you count formations, the way that you call out defenses or call out coverages or even talk to individuals on the field or off the field, you don't use any of that lingo. On top of, they expect you to learn a playbook really, really, really fast, like way faster than any camp or anything that I ever did. And, from there, when you make a mistake, you're not like a star anymore. Everybody on the field is a star. So, potentially you have a choice. You have the potential of getting cut. So the stress of it is something that I don't miss. But like the athleticism part, it doesn't even have to actually equip to how great you are. Like, yes, when you're great, great like that, you have the stature, the standpoint, the publicity to get you there, which is awesome. Now, is it going to keep you there? Potentially not. But if you're a good player on special teams, and this is the thing, is everybody wants to be that all-star on a team. Like, ask Tim Cook, for example, one of the other guys that was on my team. He went from having, I think he actually only had 14 touches, maybe 19 touches at running back at Oregon State. And he was on the Jaguars for about a year. Why? Because he was a great special teams player. And the thing is just like everybody thinks you have to be a star. Now, I feel like in ways I'm telling kids, you still have an opportunity. The chances are so slim, so small. But the stress of the game at that point is so far that I was happy when I decided to call it done, because you'll find a better life outside of playing football. And there's different ways to be a part of football. So,
yeah, I know these guys all want to play in the NFL, but man, that is a hard life. That is a hard life. Cause it's, I don't know. Anyway, I think if you have a mindset of you want to be a special teams guy, I think you actually have a better chance of making the NFL if you're not if you weren't super accomplished in college, because those guys, there's always a place for a special teams guy, but I don't know. Anyway, I was just throwing that one out there. So I'm looking at Oregon State right now. They're 6-3. Three games left. Some of the goals are gone. There's no chance of getting to the Pac-12 championship game. No chance to win a league title. Probably not going to get to the Rose Bowl, Alamo Bowl, probably Holiday Bowl. I think the top bowl they could get to is Vegas, maybe. probably, I think that Oregon State's going to end up in the Sun Bowl. That seems like the most likely destination. But the point is, you know, some of the goals are gone. How does a team, how do they finish strong with some of those big goals gone? How does the team, you know, focus on Cal and Arizona State and Oregon and try to make the most of the season when they know that, you know, that championship dream is no longer possible?
I think for the team and for Oregon State players, it's more so now, who am I playing for? You know, like, they still have the potential to have a record that, what, the last decade of Oregon State players have never had, you know? So I would be like, hey, look, like, we're doing this for us. We have to be the standpoint to the future of Oregon State. You know, we need to win out, buy in, and finish strong. You know, even look at last year, and I'd hope that they'd make it a thing where it's like, hey, look, we had this average season, made it to a bowl game, and lost the bowl game. How good do you want to be? Sucks. Yeah, we lost three, but thing is, we're still in it. We got a bowl game. Let's win. You know, let's win out for the rest of the season. And so I think, you know, with Jaden Grant and a lot of the leaders, it's just, hey, buy in, let's finish strong. And I, when I say finish strong, finish with all wins from here on. And so, you know, that's a conversation that the leaders need to have to the team and having everybody buy in 100%. And I think Coach Smith is all around that. And I think, yeah, Cal's going to be rough. Arizona State's going to be a little rough. And Oregon's going to be the roughest probably. And so, you know, like, they, if I was them, I'd want all those. And I'd want to win all those, because not only are you going to be winning, but you're now remaking a name for the Oregon State fans and culture and university for football.
Yeah.
Everybody looked at us as a joke as 5 years ago, and look at us now. But more can we do?
So these last three games, Cal, Arizona State, Oregon, they're all winnable. They could also all be losses. California, as I mentioned earlier, has lost five in a row. And they've got some bad losses. There's no question about it. The Colorado one was a bad one. But they're capable. They took USC. They took USC to the wall. They've had some other games, you know, at times they went toe to toe with Oregon. You know, eventually they just, their defense just wasn't good enough to contend with Bo Nix. But, you know, if you take Cal lightly, that's a team that can give you some problems. You know, Arizona State, they've had some games where they've looked good this season. You know, they beat Washington. The one thing I would say about that game, it's possible by the time they get to Arizona State could be out of bowl contention. And then you just don't know what a team is thinking at that point. You don't know if, you know, they're ready just to move on to workouts and next season. Oregon, I mean, on paper, the Ducks are probably a 7 to 10 point favorite. I would speculate, but at Research Stadium, Oregon State finds some magic. That team comes alive there, and those fans come alive. That's a game I think they got a shot. I don't think I'm going to predict Oregon State's going to win that game, but they got a shot. So I know there's still a possibility for a 10 win season here if they keep their heads on and really focus, as they talk about each week, playing each week as a 1-0 type situation.
No, 100% agree. I think that they have the ability to go through these next three games in March and try to win them as many as possible and potentially have all of those, but at the same time could lose all three. And so it really comes down to, and man, do I love and hate these words, but buy in and the culture that they're founding and starting on is one that I will never get to experience as a player, and anybody before me will never get to experience, because we did not win like that. We didn't have this same culture that this team has. I think they have all the ability, all the coaching, the leaders, so on and so forth, to help them finish this season strong with only three losses and all the rest is W's. But it's going to be, how bad do they want it? Can the defense stop on third downs? Can the receivers catch balls? Can Ben get out and actually make great throws? Can Martinez run the ball? Can the O-line hold up on pass? And can the O-line run block well? Can the linebackers make their stops on third down? And it's really each individual position has to have that conversation and that understanding that we want to succeed and want to be great and finish this year out strong. So I think they have those conversations, and I think I'm happy and excited to watch my program and others, other Oregon State fans and other Oregon State alumni watch this program succeed this year. And I think it's crazy that we went from, I'd be happy with a 6-6 season to, we shouldn't have lost that game. That's on coaching. We should be this record. We have the potential for this. And it's like, you went from one season from a 6-6 to now you're hoping for the moon. And I am happy with the slow progress each year. And I still do agree that, you know, we could have a great record. We can finish the year out strong. But to watch this culture change year in, year out to only a better, structured, confident, positive football team is great. And I think Coach Schmidt's doing a great job, and he's having the conversations needed. And we're having the leaders on the team that have the high expectations of each other, hold each other accountable.
When you played football, were you guys much into the basketball team?
I used to hang out with some of them. Yeah.
Were you a hooper?
Could you hoop? Oh yeah. Still hoop every, three times a week.
Were there guys on the team that thought they were pretty good?
Yes. Ryan Nall was a hooper, and a couple others were, there was actually a lot of us that were hoopers. I mean, yeah, we did hoop a lot still.
I think I saw him play high school basketball, if I remember right. Blake Brandell, he was on your, he was playing, was he at Oregon State when you were there? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, yes. He played with Nall at Central Catholic, and Jaden played at West Lynn on state championship teams, and Jalen Moore, as he likes to remind me all the time, what a great hooper he is. And you played with Jalen, and I was just mentioning there's quite a few games coming up. I know this weekend, if fans want to catch the men's team, they play Friday night. You can do the Friday-Saturday basketball-football doubleheader down at Oregon State. I just spent 5 hours at Gill last night watching the men and women play. So pretty exciting games. Both of them won in the last minute of the game. So that's about all the time we got for this week's edition of the Beaver Banter Podcast. Remember, you can find this podcast wherever you look for your favorite podcasts. Be sure to check out Oregon Live for all our Oregon State content. We'll be back next week to talk about Oregon State's upcoming game. They'll be playing at Arizona State down in Tempe on November 19th. They'll be the penultimate game of the season before they play Oregon in the season finale. And, of course, we'll be talking about the Cal game, the second-to-last home game for Oregon State. We'll see you next week.